BBC headlines take us up to 4 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll continue our look at the ripple effect of the government shutdown. We've been reporting this week on the economic impact of the shutdown on the thousands of furloughed federal workers in the state, and also the impact on the court system. Well, today we're going to hear about services that provide support for victims of sexual assault and how they are now being impacted. Then in our continuing look at efforts to eliminate plastic waste, we'll hear an inspiring story from Ridgeway, Colorado, about a group of young people who are taking matters into their own hands. Then to regular Thursday morning features, Leland Rucker joins us for the latest cannabis news, followed by Radio Nibbles with John Lendorf. After headlines from the BBC, in honour of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day next Monday, we'll hear a special radio documentary, King Stories. These are stories told by close friends and associates of Dr. King, rarely documented stories about the personal and private sides of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Hannah Lee Myers.
Wednesday, state leadership rejected a proposed ballot measure to repeal the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, or TABOR, saying the proposed amendment covers multiple subjects, which is a violation of state requirements. TABOR is a Colorado constitutional amendment passed in 1992 that requires all tax increases get voter approval and limits government spending. The group behind the ballot initiative, the Colorado Fiscal Institute, says they aren't necessarily surprised by the Colorado Secretary of State's office's panel's decision, but they will likely submit an appeal. The group is also already considering the option of proposing multiple new ballot measures to repeal TABOR partially or completely. Wednesday, newly elected Governor Jared Polis addressed the Joint Budget Committee to defend the first draft of the 2019-2020 budget he submitted earlier this week. The Denver Post reports some lawmakers spoke out against some elements of his budget proposal on Tuesday, but after Polis' speech yesterday, no one offered any questions or comments when asked after the presentation. When reporters pressed lawmakers as to why they suddenly changed course and were only offering words of support for the governor's plan, they said they met with Polis privately before his speech and are now confident they can jointly hammer out the details as the state budget conversation continues. The spokesperson for the Senate Republicans said the two Republicans in the Joint Budget Committee didn't press Polis on the details in the draft budget yesterday, in part because ultimately Democrats will make the final call on the budget, considering they now control the House and Senate. This week, the Boulder Valley School District voted to push back school start times for high school students from 7:30 or 8 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. beginning this fall in an effort to improve student health and performance with more sleep. BVSD is now one of many school districts nationwide pushing back high school start times based on new research showing teens naturally stay up later and sleep in longer than other age groups. And accommodating their sleep schedules improves high school students' health and academic performance. The Greeley and Cherry Creek school districts have already changed to a later school start time for high school students, and the Pooter and Thompson school districts will push back start times beginning in August. Expect a high today somewhere around 53 degrees, low tonight somewhere around 31. Mostly sunny today, but there's a chance for some snow tomorrow. Highs will return to the low 50s over the weekend before we see another chance for snow in the area on Monday. It's currently around 43 degrees on the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Hannah Lee Myers.
It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, we're now well into the fourth week of the partial shutdown of the government, and there are many impacts being felt, from furloughed workers not getting paychecks to other businesses in the community now suffering. I've heard reports locally of catering companies having several events being cancelled due to the shutdown. Well, one of the other stories is business that should be getting taken care of is being let slip to the side. And one of the pieces of business is the postponement of the renewal of the Violence Against Women Act. But that's not the only way that victims of sexual assault are being impacted. Federal funds are now drying up for local support services. I spoke with Bree Franklin, who is the executive director of the Colorado Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
So there are actually two things happening. One is the act itself has expired, and there were discussions before the shutdown about reauthorizing it, and so those discussions have stalled. But really the bigger concern is around funding appropriation. So we know, so the act can expire, but funding can still be appropriated to those programs. In fact, that happened between 2010 and 2013. So the concern around reauthorizing the act is certainly there, and we eventually want it to be reauthorized, but that's not the most immediate concern. The most immediate concern is around appropriating funding to those programs. And not only that, but there are organizations that have current grants that, because of the government shutdown, are not able to draw down their money in order to pay for those services, primarily paying staff salaries, as well as any kind of program expenses. So I think what we've seen is in the last year and a half with the Me Too movement, there has been an increased demand for services as people are hearing more about sexual assault, recognizing what's happened to them as a problem, reaching out for assistance and services. There's already waiting lists, and now there's this concern that there's not going to be enough money and they're not going to be able to pay staff and they might have to close their doors, even if temporarily. That's still going to be a problem.
Can you give us a sense of some of the local impact and what some of those services look like here in Colorado that are very much dependent on these federal funds that are drying up due to the shutdown?
Yeah, so I think the biggest impact that we're seeing right now is within particularly our rural communities and with smaller organizations that don't have huge operating reserves. So they can't go more than a month or 3 months without having money come in. They just don't have enough in the bank. But particularly in rural communities, it's not just your rape crisis center. A lot of victims also need other types of services. And so any kind of services around housing or food stamps or any of those other kind of social service net, with those not being available or workers being furloughed or offices being closed, they're not able to access those. One of the biggest impacts we've seen is with tribes. And so in Southwest Colorado, with our tribal communities, what we've heard is, Bureau of Indian Affairs has been drastically impacted by this. We've heard that the victim advocate who is situated in the Bureau of Indian Affairs has been furloughed. We haven't been able to confirm that, but that's concerning that we haven't been able to contact anyone. And what that likely means is that victims aren't able to contact anyone either. So there's not a victim advocate at all for that community. So if something happens to a victim, they don't have anyone to reach out to for support.
And we are hearing a lot of reports of that very damaging impact on Native American communities around the country, not only on services for victims of sexual assault, but also basic health care, food pantries, many other services being disrupted. And these are life-saving services in many ways.
Yeah, these are critical, especially for the tribes. Part of their treaty with giving up their land is that they have access to these types of services. And so it's really doing a disservice to them and to not have those services that they've been promised. And particularly for victims, and we know that Native American women are at the highest risk for sexual assault and other types of crimes that are similar to that. There's a much higher risk for Native American women than for the general population. So this is definitely a high need community.
Is there any way that states or local communities can bridge the gap while federal funding is in limbo due to the shutdown?
You know, I think communities are trying. We've read some articles and, you know, heard of some tribes providing their own budget money to cover the gap. We know particularly like Ute Mountain Ute is not doesn't have a ton of resources and a ton of money. So again, it's the communities that already are strapped are the ones that are being impacted the most.
So in terms of the funding, that's one thing. Now, we did also talk about the urgency to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act. Now, you did say that you are hopeful that that will be reauthorized. It has been several times before, but just give our listeners a quick reminder of exactly what the Violence Against Women is Act is all about.
Yeah, so the Act itself provides a lot of guidance around how victim services are provided and how victims should be treated. Within the Act, there's also the grant programs, which provide the funding. So those provisions around how services are provided, how victims are treated, are still in effect, even though the bill has expired. What really is impacted is those grant programs. So future funding is in jeopardy. But again, what we know is the Act has expired previously, and the government can still appropriate funding to it. But it just, you know, puts it more up in the air as to whether that funding is going to be there, because there isn't that kind of hook of like the Act's in effect, you do need to fund it. And we would much rather take the time to create a meaningful act than to just pass something to pass something. Every time the act has been reauthorized, it has been strengthened, it has moved forward. So we would like to continue to see that. Obviously, over time, we learn about new best practices and better ways of doing things. So we want to incorporate those things into the new reauthorization.
Well, Bree Franklin is the Executive Director of the Colorado Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Thank you very much for taking time to talk to us today.
Yeah, thank you.
And Bree Franklin says that for people who are concerned about the impact of the federal shutdown on victim support services for sexual assault victims, well, she says you could reach out to local organisations and find out what they need. Maybe that's volunteers, maybe it's donations. And you can find a full list and find your local support services at their website. That's ccasa.org, ccasa.org. Click on the resources button and then there's a link for Get Help, and you can find your local organisations. It's 8:16. You're listening to KGNU. Well, for the past year, we've been really taking a very close look at zero waste issues, and specifically plastic. And now we're going to take a look at what's happening on the Western Slope. In the fall of 2017, four seventh grade girls from Ridgeway, Colorado, formed a group with the goal of banning single-use plastic bags in their hometown. Well, more than a year later, the Ridgeway Town Council adopted a single-use plastic ban ordinance. KVNF's Ali Lightfoot spoke with these three young activists about their efforts.
Macy Gordon, Indigo Croy, Autumn Sagal, and Eleni Wallen became concerned about plastic pollution after learning about the formation of a floating island of plastic debris in the Pacific Ocean, more than twice the size of Texas.
A lot of our plastic today ends up in the ocean, which animals eat because they mistake them for food. It's like entire ecosystems that keep the world in check.
Research shows that the average American uses about 500 plastic bags each year, for about 12 minutes each. The girls felt that reducing single-use plastics in their town was the obvious way to make a difference. And the group Carry On Ridgeway Reuses was formed and went to work with the mission to get a plastic bag ban enacted in their town. For over a year, the girls worked to educate themselves, inform community members, petition town council, and provide alternatives to single-use plastics.
We researched other towns and how they passed their ordinances. We had a meeting with the mayor.
We went to the first town council meeting.
We also walked around to stores.
We set up an informational table.
We wrote many letters to the editor
and press releases about the dangers of plastics.
We showed the Bag It movie.
We got the director to do a Q&A.
Sold reusable bags that are made out of 100% recycled plastic.
We're making Plarn yarn made out of plastic bags.
We're going to crochet the Plarn into reusable bags.
But not everybody agreed that it was a good idea.
During one of our meetings, we had someone speak out and say, like, they didn't want the ban. And I've heard a couple things of people that saying, like, oh, you're taking away jobs from people that make plastic. And just there are some people that don't believe in it.
the part where we felt the most like sad was when it didn't get passed at multiple meetings where we would go and then they'd say they were going to pass it next time and they wouldn't. Then we'd go again. I think that was the most like crushing.
Despite some opposition, the unwavering commitment from the girls brought in new champions for the cause.
Some people in my family and just people I know, they grew up in the time where they just relied on plastic and they don't really know about fossil fuels or carbon footprints or anything, so they don't understand the impact that it really takes. But them like watching me do this campaign, they've really like understood how harmful it can be, especially my grandma. She's really, really into it. She helped us sew the reusable produce bags.
At the end of the summer, the girls went to Ridgeway Town Council and proposed the ordinance.
At first, they were going to make a bunch of exceptions to the plastic bag ban that we originally had made. Exceptions with plastic around flowers and fruit bags, carrying meat. But to our excitement, a couple months later, after we had discussed it with the town council for a bit, they agreed to take all the exceptions out of it. So now we have a plastic bag ban that was passed. And it doesn't have any exceptions to it. So all single-use plastic bags are banned from Ridgeway.
I asked the girls why their campaign was so successful.
I think being kids definitely helped us out a lot because I think it was surprising to some people that we were seventh graders doing this. And so they paid more attention and then they had more support for us.
The girls were happy that they were able to bring attention to the issue of plastic pollution and also appreciated the notoriety it brought them.
I like being an activist because people listen to you and there's a lot of interviews and I'm in the newspaper a lot, so it's sort of fun.
The Carry On Group's goal is to take their campaign to Denver to encourage statewide legislation restricting the availability of single-use plastics in Colorado. And although their work on the issue takes a lot of time and effort, they insist that it isn't that hard to make a difference.
I'm glad that we did this. We really feel like we're making a change. And if you want to get this started, it's really not as hard as it sounds. It takes time, but if you really try, you can do it. Like, you just have to go around. We walked around to places and we got signatures of support, and then you just take it to the town council and keep informing the public. You can do it.
For Western Slope Resources reporting, this is Allie Lightfoot.
This story is part of Western Slope Resources reporting, a collaboration between KSJD, KVNF, and three other radio stations in rural Colorado, made possible with support from the Gates Family Foundation.
And you can find all of KGNU's reporting on zero waste and efforts to eliminate plastic waste online at news.kgnu.org. Just click on zero waste. And we do hope you'll join us on Thursday, January 31st at 6:30 p.m. at the Longmont Museum for a community conversation on how we can eliminate plastic waste. You can find out more about that online at kgnu.org. Leland Rucker is the senior editor at Sensi Magazine and he joins us on Thursday mornings to talk about the latest news in cannabis. Today we're going to take a look at a new book written by a former New York Times columnist that warns parents about the dangers of cannabis when it comes to their children. Leland, tell us a little bit about this. It's written by Alex Berenson.
Yes, Alex Berenson. He's a novelist and a former New York Times reporter. And the book is called Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. And basically, he's warning that THC, the psychoactive compound in marijuana, is contributing to mental health issues, especially among younger users, and claims that paranoia, depression, violence, suicide, and murder are the real byproducts of legalization. And he really makes a somber, gloomy case that the country is just moving too quickly to legalize cannabis without looking at the downsides, and he sees only downsides.
Is he basing any of his work on statistics or scientific studies to point to some of these issues?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he has plenty of that. And he's basically picked all of the negative studies. I mean, there have been thousands and thousands of studies on cannabis. You know, some of them come up with one thing, some of them come up with another thing. And he kind of picks the ones that are the most negative, including the ones that are about people who use cannabis and are violent and commit murders and do things like that. And he's also really disdainful of what he calls the pro-cannabis lobby. He says it's greedy people trying to take advantage of consumers in this push to legalize that we have in the United States. And he says that they're ignoring the piles of evidence that he puts into the book, that they're completely ignoring that and trying to dupe people. And I just think that's dishonest to call everybody in the industry greedy or that they don't care about other people or that they're not interested in this. And, you know, for instance, he says the government should drop all barriers to researching cannabis for medical purposes.
I think everyone can be on board with that.
I'm on board with that, you know, like nobody's business. He says the reason is not that marijuana is likely to prove a miracle cure for cancer or anything else. It's precisely the opposite. Let's put unfounded claims to rest permanently. Well, I'm all for getting rid of claims, you know, that claims that are false. But when you begin with the supposition that all cannabis medicine is not, that's not a good way to start, at least from my point of view as a reader. I don't really think that's a good place to start from because you're already biased.
Well, I think that issue of the lack of actual scientific research into all of this is, you know, really fundamental. We are seeing a lot more research into this. It's a lot more science that is coming through around the medicinal benefits of cannabis. And some of them might prove that some of the anecdotal stories that we have heard, well, maybe that's not actually based in science, but we're not going to know that until all of that research comes through. And as we have discussed, one of the big barriers is the lack of federal support for research and the fact that public universities, even in states like Colorado, where cannabis is legal, they can't really dig into research of cannabis because of the federal prohibition.
You know, he doesn't mention that. He doesn't talk about the federal prohibitions on, say, on, you know, and he's asking for more research. Everybody's asking for more research. At one point, he kind of spanks a University of Colorado researcher down in Denver for studying the effects of cigarettes on mental health, but not cannabis. But he kind of misses that. You know, I know professors up here at CU who are looking for funding because they have a study ready to go on how concentrates affect young people. But they can't get it because the government is against it and because the government won't give them the cannabis that they need to do those kinds of experiments. The real problem is that, like for instance, he states that 5 years after legalization, the black market is still around. Well, nobody said it wasn't going to be. Nobody said that after 100 years that the black market would completely disappear right away. That's one of the things that anti-cannabis people say. And if anything that he says is true, this has to be out of the open. So basically, I'm saying that maybe we'll get a book one day that will actually look at one side and look at the other side and try to come to some conclusion. This is not that book, unfortunately.
Well, that book is Tell Your Children. Alex Berenson is the author. And Leland Drucker is a senior editor at Cincy Magazine. You can read more about his review of that book and much more cannabis news at cincymag.com or catch the hard copy at newsstands around the Front Range. Thanks, Leland.
Thank you.
Time for Radio Nibbles.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Time for Radio Nibbles, John Lendorf. This week, you are lifting a glass to Charlie Papazian, and it is particularly a glass of home brew.
Absolutely. For those of you who don't know, my friend Charlie, he was a nuclear engineer, but he actually just retired after 40 years of running and founding the Brewers Association and the organization he started, the American Homebrewers Association, along with the Great American Beer Festival. He is the godfather of American craft brewing, and he's finally stepping away from the day-to-day hubbub.
Well, he wrote what I think is viewed as the definitive text for home brewers, right?
The Bible, yes. The Complete Joy of Home Brewing, which has sold like a million copies. And, you know, Boulder is regarded as like the Silicon Valley of craft brew. This is where you know, this area. And that's thanks to Charlie. I also wanted to say, you know, beer and radio grew up together in Boulder. At the started at the community free school. That was a KGNU class, and they were trying to put together this radio station. And at the same time, Charlie was there teaching the very first homebrew classes that were allowed because President Carter had legalized homebrewing.
There's a story from the founders that how they came up with the call letters, KGNU. They got a six-pack of beer and sat around throwing out call letters and came up with GNU. So,
oh,
there you go.
I hadn't heard that before. That's just perfect. The wooden spoon Charlie's always used to stir his homebrew is in the Smithsonian, and he has one other claim to fame.
Yes, January 23rd is Charlie Papazian's birthday, and so he also made it National Pie Day.
That's right, and that's how, if you've listened to this show and read my stuff, you know that pie is a big part of life here, and Boulder is known for pie. And, well, that's also thanks to Charlie.
All right, so next Wednesday, folks, celebrate National Pie Day by having some homemade pie. Speaking of beer, 3-2 beer is no more in Colorado.
For the entire time I've been in Colorado, that was what was in the supermarket, and I always ignored it. And now there's this, we're like normal people in other states with all kinds of craft brew in the on the supermarket shelves. Whether that's going to affect small grocers and small, you know, liquor stores and things like that, I'm not sure, but it's a sign of the times.
Full-strength beer now available everywhere.
Hey, Sam, what's the best thing you've tasted lately?
Well, I had a good beer at Fate, you know, the brew pub, just a little bit south of KGNU over there on Arapaho. They make a coffee kolsch. They use Ozo Coffee, local coffee roaster and purveyor, and a kolsch, of course, a lighter style German beer. Just really, really lovely. Perfect balance of the coffee flavor with the, you know, the lighter taste of a kolsch.
40 years ago, that was not available.
This is true. Well, you can listen to archived Radio Nibble shows at news.kgnu.org, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Charlie.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate, too. Here's cacciatore, Dory. Taste the bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes. Hoping this good food fills you.